Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from North Rim Bank, supporting economic and business reporting across the state on Alaska Public Media. NorthRimBank.com.
There's been supposedly a lot of work that's been done over the last 3 days. I couldn't tell you what that is because I haven't been a part of it.
State lawmakers fail to meet an informal deadline to vote on a tax cut bill for the Alaska LNG project. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, July 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, volunteers in Anchorage are struggling to find homes for parakeets after a man let his birds mate uncontrolled.
You start out with 2 or 4, and pretty soon you're pushing 50.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
Family and friends held a funeral for Chester Kashatuk of Quigilingok over the weekend. KYUK's Evan Erickson reports his body was found by a community member nearly 8 months after the remnants of Typhoon Halong ripped through his community.
45-year-old Chester Kashatuk had been missing since the night of the X-Typhoon last October. He was the son of 67-year-old Ella Mae Kashatuk, whose body was found one day after the storm. Her brother, 71-year-old Vernon Pavel, is still missing. The three were together inside the same home when rising floodwaters and powerful winds swept it off its foundation on the morning of October 12th. Earlier this month, a local resident located Kashatuk's remains in the Quigilingok River, roughly a mile outside of town, according to Alaska State Troopers. The remains were sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage and positively identified as Kashatuk. 2 days after the storm, troopers and other emergency responders had suspended the search for Kashatuk and Pavel as the mass evacuation of Quigilingok was underway. In the weeks that followed, village public safety officers and search and rescue volunteers kept looking for the pair. Quigilingok Tribal Administrator Gavin Phillip attended Kashatuk's funeral at the Moravian Church in Bethel on Sunday. He says his longtime friend was soft-spoken, but had a gift for playing guitar and, quote, had the courage to sing in front of people every so often. Phillip says Kashatuk was grounded in his Moravian faith and would often quote his favorite Bible verse from Proverbs about the importance of respecting the teachings and guidance of parents. Kashatuk was buried in Bethel Memorial Cemetery. He is survived by his father, Joseph Kashatuk, daughter, Danae Kashatuk, son, Nolan Atty, sister, Kristen Sutton, and numerous extended family members. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Alaska lawmakers failed to meet an informal deadline today to vote on a bill reducing taxes for the Alaska LNG project. Lawmakers had planned to reconvene in Juneau to vote on a compromise drafted by a conference committee, but leaders of the bipartisan coalitions controlling the House and Senate say they're still working out the details after a lengthy series of hearings on Friday and Saturday. They're now planning on a final vote for July 16th. Soldotna Representative Justin Ruffridge, representing the House's all-Republican minority on the conference committee, says his caucus is in the dark. So he and 7 other House Republicans showed up to the Capitol to make their case during what's known as a technical session.
There's been supposedly a lot of work that's been done over the last 3 days. I couldn't tell you what that is because I haven't been a part of it. And I think that's frustrating for a lot of people. So they try to come find out what's happening on their own.
Technical sessions are typically uneventful. Lawmakers gavel in and quickly adjourn without taking any action. But House Minority Leader Delaina Johnson, a Palmer Republican, says she planned to object to adjourning. That would give Republicans a chance to express their concerns about the slow progress on the bill on the floor. But they didn't get that chance. House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham Independent, canceled the session instead.
To have a number of members come down for a technical session after they were advised not to come down, just to create political theater, is not helping the process.
Edgemond says lawmakers are making progress behind the scenes. He says he expects the conference committee to roll out a new draft of the gas pipeline tax bill tomorrow with what he described as technical fixes and cleanup language. Lawmakers also today declined to attempt an override of nearly $90 million in state budget items vetoed by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Edgemond says lawmakers simply didn't have the three-quarters supermajority needed to override a budget veto. A deep-sea whale rarely seen in southeast Alaska washed up on shore near Sitka in early June. The goose-beaked whale was found by a group of Sitkins who were camping at a U.S. Forest Service cabin on Kruzoff Island. KCAW's Hope McKinney reports.
Ellie Schmidt and a few of her friends were camping at Fred's Creek Cabin in early June. On a rainy Saturday morning at low tide, they took a walk on the beach.
And we came across a weird object, which I thought was part of a boat. She thought maybe it was a very weirdly colored log, like it was very white and gleaming.
As they got closer, they realized it was a whale. Closer still, a very unusual one.
To me, it was the weirdest whale I've ever seen. It had the shape of a dolphin, but it was so much bigger than a dolphin. And it was really striking.
The whale was about 20 feet long, but it wasn't just one. Schmidt says they also saw a fetus protruding from the adult whale's body. So they tied the mother up on the beach, anchoring her body to drifted logs, and they called NOAA's Regional Marine Mammal Stranding Coordinators, who asked them to remove the fetus and take it back to Sitka on their 8-foot dinghy.
And so we basically, you know, found whatever gloves we had around, whatever sharp things we had around, and then carefully cut open the whale and then put this beautiful whale fetus into a cooler. We estimated it was 150 pounds, around 6 feet long, and very beautiful. And then put the cooler in the boat and brought it back to town.
Whale biologist Lauren Wild met them at the dock, put the whale fetus into a body bag, and put it in the freezer at the local University of Alaska Southeast campus.
And then it sort of became, should we go out and do a necropsy on the mom? Is there information we can find out?
Goose-beaked whales are found in deep offshore waters in most oceans and seas worldwide, but their migration patterns still aren't known. They're the deepest and longest diving mammal in the world, capable of diving at least 3,300 feet for 20 to 40 minutes to feed on cephalopods like squid and octopus.
It's sort of a very unusual thing for a beaked whale to wash up because they live offshore. And they're deep divers, and so for it to have somehow floated in, you know, the currents must be quite interesting there for it to have gotten into that cove.
Beaked whales use echolocation for navigation and foraging and are particularly sensitive to underwater sounds.
They're also typically the species of whale that is associated with Navy sonar. So when you hear about mass strandings, often those have been beaked whales.
The Kruzoff stranding wasn't the only one this summer. A second beaked whale was found beached in Yakutat in early June. Wild says this is rare. Previously, only two were reported in the area in the past 40 years.
It's cool to get a specimen wash up dead because you can kind of get poke into it a little bit more and learn more about it.
Wild put a small response team together and returned to the stranding site 2 days later to perform a partial necropsy, or animal autopsy, on the mother. Wild says they were able to retrieve the head, get skin and blubber samples for genetics and hormone testing, and fecal samples to test for harmful algal blooms. They also looked in her stomach, which was full of squid beaks, meaning she likely didn't starve to death.
We weren't able to sort of definitively say what the cause of death was, unfortunately, and because the carcass was just too far, it was in kind of a moderate decomposition stage, we weren't really able to get all the things that we would want to get that might help us understand cause of death.
They brought the whale's head back to town with them to freeze and use for education purposes in the future. Wild says while she had hoped they could retrieve more, she's grateful they got the opportunity to do the necropsy at all.
Beaked whales are so poorly understood exactly what they're doing and what they're eating and all the different kind of life history parameters that are so difficult to study on these like really seldom seen offshore deep diving species. But I mostly just think it's a cool experience to have been able to get what we did.
Wild says they scanned the fetus at the local hospital on June 25th. And she says they plan to perform a public necropsy on the fetus at Whale Fest this fall, which could shed light on what caused them to wash ashore on a remote Southeast Alaska island. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, one reporter gets a crash course in martial arts at a new jiu-jitsu studio in Juneau.
One of the things that often happens when people do martial arts is they become more confident.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
Two people have died after a multi-vehicle collision this morning on the Seward Highway, according to Anchorage police. Another person was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The incident occurred around 9 a.m. today between Rabbit Creek and Potter Valley Road. When responders arrived on scene, three vehicles were found partially submerged in water. Anchorage police spokesperson Adam Nicely says two of the drivers involved in the collision were pronounced dead at the scene. The highway between Rabbit Creek and Potter Valley Road remained closed for about 7 hours while police investigated the incident. The highway was reopened at 4:30 this afternoon. The U.S. Coast Guard says it received a report of a man overboard late Monday afternoon in Bristol Bay from the fishing vessel Sandman in the vicinity of the Igigik Bay, about 40 miles southwest of Naknek. The Coast Guard searched the area with Alaska State Troopers for several hours by boat and helicopter and says the search was suspended just before midnight pending the development of new information. A Coast Guard spokesperson said weather on scene was approximately 17 mile per hour winds gusting to 28 with 5 foot seas and 7 miles of visibility. The crew member had not been publicly identified as of Tuesday afternoon. The Coast Guard said he was reportedly not wearing a life jacket. The Coast Guard reports the incident is under investigation. A glacial outburst flood on the Taku River south of Juneau crested early this morning. Water rushed out of Lake No Lake, a basin dammed by the Tulsiqua Glacier in British Columbia. Aaron Jacobs is a senior service hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. He says the release began sometime Tuesday morning and was confirmed by a resident in the remote area.
We haven't heard any reports of any damages or injuries or anything like that.
The Taku River crested at 4:30 a.m. this morning, reaching a little over 40 feet. That's about the same size as the glacial outburst flood that crested on the same day last year. And it's a few feet below the height that would make it a minor flood, so the river did not breach its banks. The water level was expected to fall throughout today, according to the Weather Service forecast. Outburst floods generally follow a bell curve over their lifetime. They start off small when icebergs displace a lot of water in the dammed lake and prevent it from filling too much. Then the floods grow larger and reach their peak as that ice melts and the lake expands. Finally, the floods get smaller again as the glacier thins, lowering the ice dam wall and reducing the amount of water the lake can hold. But Jacob says year-to-year variation and a lack of detailed monitoring makes it difficult to tell whether the Taku River has passed its flood peak already.
It's really hard to say where we lie on that type of bell curve or on the size of floods that we could have, because we saw a record flooding event not too long ago.
According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Taku River had its largest recorded glacial outburst flood in 2021. That flood reached 45 and a half feet. Jacob says it broke the record due to a few compounding factors, an above average snowpack the preceding winter, rainfall from an atmospheric river, and a heat wave all added more water to the river at the time of the flood. Jacob says the Taku River will probably have a second smaller glacial outburst flood this year, sometime in August or September. Pets give people companionship and unconditional love. But sometimes there are more pets than there are people who want them. That's what's happening in Anchorage, where nearly 20 parakeets need homes after a man let his birds mate and then gave them up. And as Alaska Public Media's Hannah Flohr reports, while it's always been difficult to find birds new homes, it's getting harder as Alaska's population ages.
Parakeet cages fill a room in a modest house in South Anchorage. The birds are big fans of country music. Well, maybe any music. Their foster mom, Karen Rappy, doesn't actually give them a choice.
They get country and that's it.
Rappy is retired and has fostered parakeets for years. But right now, she has more than usual. She says that's because one man decided to let his birds mate uncontrolled.
You start out with two or four and pretty soon you're pushing 50.
It's part of a larger problem. It's getting increasingly hard to find homes for cage birds like cockatoos and parakeets and macaws. But the situation is not entirely new. People get those birds without realizing quite how loud they are or how high maintenance they can be. But now the problem is getting worse because in Anchorage and around the state, the senior population has more than doubled in the last 15 years. When older people go into assisted living or die or even just move, their birds often need a new home. Rappy says that's what happened with the original owner of those 48 parakeets. He moved down south. She found homes for the first batch of 20 earlier this year. They were babies, she says. Cute. Easy to adopt out. She's working through the rest now, but it's slow going. The parakeet market is flooded, she says. Amber Morris is with the Alaska Bird Club. It helps rescue and rehome cage birds like macaws and cockatiels. She says the man called the club asking for help rehoming the parakeets when he realized he couldn't keep them.
Birds owners are leaving them not necessarily by choice.
She says in the past, the club mostly rehomed birds from young people when they went away to school or got remarried. But over the last decade, more and more elders are giving up their birds. And she says it's an issue everywhere.
It's not just our populace in Alaska that's getting older. And so there are a lot of people who are, you know, relinquishing birds. There are a lot of homeless birds.
She says the bigger birds can live a long time, 80 to 90 years. That's a lot of life left when elderly people can't take care of their parrots or cockatiels anymore. When a bird needs a new home, the club writes up what Morris calls a singles ad. Sometimes that's easy. The bird is beautiful and cuddly. It has a sparkling personality. Sometimes it's not. The thing about birds, Morris says, is they're a very specific type of pet. They're messy.
Birds don't have lips, and so whenever they eat, food goes everywhere.
Some parrots can scream really loudly. In your house, she says, not so fun. But Morris says for the right person, they're a wonderful pet.
Parrots are beautiful. It makes you look a little less crazy when you talk to a pet that actually can talk back to you. They can be very snuggly. They're very interesting to watch.
They're great imitators. They might cry like a baby or offer to take the dog for a walk. It's important to find the right fit, Maura says. They can have strong personalities, like the African gray parrot a few years ago that just hated women, a real misogynist. But it worked out, she says, because soon afterward, a gay couple applied to adopt a parrot. Perfect fit. Morris says, generally, she worries less about the parakeets. They're easier to rehome because they're a great starter bird. Less loud, less messy, less commitment in terms of lifespan. Their beaks can draw blood, but just a little, not like a bigger bird's can. Those bigger birds, cockatoos and macaws and African gray parrots, they're the hardest, Morris says. They are not starter birds. That's especially true when they've been living with someone for a really long time. Like when older people die or have to give up their birds. Sometimes those birds just can't be rehomed, Maura says. That's what keeps her up at night, worrying.
The birds that need homes that... See, now I'm getting emotional. that we won't be able to find homes for. That might end up in really bad situations.
She's thinking about the birds she's seen living in dark garages, in closets with the door shut. But Rappy says, for these parakeets at least, it won't come to that.
You know, eventually, homes will come, I'm hoping.
If not, she says, they can stay with her forever. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
About 1,000 miles southwest of Adak in the Aleutians, three sailors are safe after being rescued. The three-day effort in the North Pacific was an international Coast Guard rescue that concluded on June 21st. The U.S., Canadian, and Japanese Coast Guards coordinated to reach the crew of the Mazia, a 40-foot sailboat that lost rudder control and was unable to steer. Rough weather kept nearby Good Samaritan vessels from reaching them. A Canadian Coast Guard ship was already deployed in the region, and sailors sail more than 575 miles to reach the disabled sailboat. All three sailors were found in good health. They were evacuated to a Japanese Coast Guard vessel, which took them to Japan. The sailors included two men and a woman, all Canadian. They'd been sailing across the Pacific from Japan to Prince Rupert, British Columbia. The Mazeya was left adrift in international waters. The U.S. Coast Guard says it's not currently a hazard to navigation. The sailboat was marked with the word SAFE in red paint across its hull and cabin top. The vessel's solar-powered tracking system is also still on. Nearly 35 years ago, roughly 13,000 commemorative bricks were purchased to help fund improvements for Town Square Park in Anchorage. Now, residents who bought bricks will have the opportunity to get them back. The park in the heart of downtown Anchorage is undergoing major construction to revitalize the area. For years, the bricks have served as a reminder of the park's history. Nicolette Chamato with the city's Parks and Recreation Department says between the construction and the state of the bricks, it was time to remove them.
The bricks are there, still serving their purpose, but they kind of reach the end of their serviceability. You know, they're breaking, you can hardly read them anymore. And now that we're doing the reconstruction, it just made sense to take them up and offer them back to the community members that purchased them.
In 2009, some of the bricks were removed due to construction. Over time, bricks have gone missing or were damaged. Chamato says that after all these years, wear and tear should be expected.
It's not, you know, not a secret that not all the bricks exist. Most of them are intact still, but there are a couple of areas where it's looking pretty rough.
The bricks are currently being excavated and put onto pallets separated by location. Once available, owners will be able to search for the bricks at a designated spot. Pickup is expected to take place late summer into early fall. A new jiu-jitsu studio opened in Juneau this month. It's a nonprofit, and its founders say they want it to be a welcoming and approachable space for anyone who wants to get into the sport. KTOO's Yvonne Crumery went to a beginner class. By putting someone in a chokehold for the first time, she learns firsthand what it means to have a space built on trust, care, and mutual respect.
Right off the bat, I wasn't prepared, and I definitely wasn't prepared physically. I didn't have shorts to wear under my gi. That's the jacket, pants, and belt ensemble people typically practice jiu-jitsu in.
Sometimes the pants come down a little bit.
Totally. That's one of the things I envisioned when I was dreading this today, was getting pants.
But Flow State Jiu-Jitsu and Yoga founding member Skylar Bayer saved me from that fate. She found shorts for me. Once we were all suited up, we began to practice holds that everyone else had already learned. Of course, I was the only new person. Bayer walked me through what's called a mount, demonstrating on a willing volunteer.
I'm on top of her. Her back's on the mat. This is a very, very bad position for her because my hips are on top of her hips. It means I can, like, choke her, break her arms, all sorts of things. And then
that willing volunteer was Margaret Katzik, and Katzik quickly threw her off in a graceful motion. Then it was my turn to escape. Sure. I wormed my way out from under Katzik less gracefully. She was a good sport about it. Next, the three of us practiced a chokehold. This was harder for me. Instructor Becca Carboneau checked in on us.
Yep. Bring these elbows in and down.
How's that feel, Margaret? What are we missing?
Katzik kindly indicated I wasn't really doing that much of a chokehold.
Yeah, okay. I'm kind of afraid to choke her. Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
She's fine.
But getting over fear is sort of what this whole thing is about, Bayer told me.
One of the things that often happens when people do martial arts is they become more confident.
Yeah.
So the way they just carry themselves makes them less likely to be targeted.
She told me the space is built on consent, trust, and care for the people you're literally grappling with. The people in the holds tap out when they hit their limits, tapping either on their partner's arms or legs or on the mat. Instructor Carboneau told me before class that Flow State started as a way to share jiu-jitsu with the community. She says they try and bring that mutual respect off the mat and into every area of the business.
Yeah, so there's a group of us in town that have trained jiu-jitsu for a long time in different spaces, started in different areas, but became a good group of training partners and friends over time, and all really value different styles of training, diversity of thought and experiences.
Anne Carboneau loves jiu-jitsu. She's good at it, and she competes across the country.
I got bored of running and lifting. I needed something more mentally engaging, and if you do jiu-jitsu, like, can't think about literally anything else when you're trying not to get strangled.
Bear, who was acting as my personal coach for the evening, walked me through another hold and escape, the backpack hold. We're seated on the mat. First, she wraps her legs around my waist from behind me like a koala. Then her arms slide under my armpit and over my shoulder.
This is what's gonna control you really well. And so what she was just going over was like how to escape that. Okay. Like wiggle out like a little animal.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And wiggle out I did. Then she shows me how to choke someone from behind. She did it first. And then I got over my fears and I tried. I did a bit better this time. After class, I checked back in with Margaret Katzeek to make sure there were no hard feelings about my attempt to choke her. There wasn't. She said she started learning jujitsu years ago for the self-defense aspect. But now, she keeps coming back because it really engages her.
Like, I play softball, basketball, volleyball. It's just such a different sport. Yeah, like, I think it just mindful strength. Strengthen, like, your mind and body. I think it touches all those aspects.
And she stays engaged, even when she's not in class, by thinking about how to improve her escapes. She hopes the space will encourage more people to give the sport a shot.
You just got to try it. You're starting out at the same place that anybody else has started out.
And Flow State also has yoga classes. But this beginner class was enough for me. Tapping out in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Evan Erickson in Bethel, Eric Stone, Alex Solomon, and Yvonne Crumery in Juneau, Hope McKinney in Sitka, Michaela Finnerty and Hannah Floor in Anchorage, Jesse Sheldon in Dillingham, and Sophia Stewart Rossi in Unalaska. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde. Kristen Dobroth is our producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.